Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and him, Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. I apologise for the loudness of that hello. It came out of nowhere, but those of you who have been listening right from the start of the festive period, darlings, will know that we recorded all these on one night way back the 19th of December when I decided to augment the reality of the situation by bringing a couple of bottles of wine, etc., out to the office. So that's why the hello was loud and enthusiastic. And also, we're nearly at the start of a new year, Kieran, which, for the love of God, has to be better than the last couple, doesn't it? So we have one more short questions pod for you. I should rephrase that. We have one more pod with long questions on it, but it's not many of them, because they are proper questions. Your Christmas just keeps going on, Kieran. I don't know if producer guys just stored these up to throw at you over Christmas to keep you interested, but they are proper accountancy questions, aren't they?
They are. My word.
Yeah. I still feel I should be saying to you, what are you doing tomorrow night, New Year's Eve? But it doesn't matter because it's 19th of December. So our first question comes from Liam Tyrrell. Liam says that last season, my local team, Wakefield AFC, announced details of some, inverted commas, significant investment. You've often spoken about some lower league teams being potentially good options for keen investors, and Wakefield appear to tick many boxes. Definitely one of the biggest cities in the country without a league club, a decent catchment area extending beyond the five towns within the metropolitan borough of Wakefield, plus no legacy issues. I'm interested in your thoughts on the type of investment confirmed by Wakefield AFC and the potential of the club's ambitious plans to work its way up the pyramid. I particularly admire the professionalism of the setup, with a strong focus on its academy and apprenticeship scheme in unison with the local college. I think Liam has a job in PR ahead of him, if whatever he does at the moment doesn't go well. It's an interesting question about Wakefield, though, Kieran.
Yes, and Wakefield is always one of my football quiz questions, which is the largest town in the country without a club which is professional. And the population of Wakefield is 330,000 people.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, Burnley's got 80,000. So it's not got a football club.
Well, that's it. But our overseas listeners may not know that Wakefield's always been more associated with rugby league, isn't it, as a sport?
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, it's always been a good pub quiz question, that one. And I might actually, as we are recording this on the 19th, I might actually retrospectively stick this into the into our quiz. So we're now sort of in some weird type of Back to the Future time.
Oh, hang on, you are really playing mind games with me now. So we've had we've had the quiz, haven't we?
We've had the quiz.
Well, we haven't, because we're recording this before the quiz, but this will be our...
I've not written the questions yet for the quiz, so now I've got an extra question I can put in.
Kieran, that's not the important thing. Is I'm two bottles of wine in. You can't play mind games like this for me. I'm really genuinely, I've got to get up the garden path back into the kitchen. pretend I haven't been drinking while I'm working.
Right. Anyway, back to Wakefield. Liam is absolutely right. It does have a large catchment area close by. It's the Wakefield AFC was effectively formed in 2019. In its present incarnation, it does seem to be very progressive. It's got a women's team. It was taken over in 2021 by a company called VO2 Capital, which is some sort of family company from Connecticut in the US of A. Presently in the seventh tier of football, so it's got a fair amount of climbing to do. But I think there's a lot to be said in respect of getting a club which is relatively low down, because you can learn through your mistakes. I think that we've just seen, just before Christmas, Bedford FC were acquired by new owners, and I think they've already said to us that we fancy coming on the show, so we'll be delighted to talk to them. The American owners, they've got different ideas, and I think Kieran,
they said that to us in a rather threatening way. It wasn't a "we really rather fancy coming on the pod." It was a "bring it on."
Yes. And I think fresh ideas for football. They shouldn't be sneered at. They should be judged on their merits. So I think there's a lot to be said for the new owners at Wakefield, and it certainly is a place which does have potential. It's a football club that can grow into the city, which is always useful because some clubs perhaps have a natural ceiling in terms of their size. So yeah, I think Liam's raised a good issue here, and all of the things that they appear to be doing, which we're in favour of, using the club as a local hub, benefits of education, diversity in terms of a women's team, boxes ticks left, right, and centre.
It's interesting, Kieran, isn't it? We're talking about Wakefield and Bedford here. In years gone by, all of us listening to this, especially in the UK, if our team was away from home or we couldn't get there, we would go to our local non-league team. So we would go to Tootingham, Mitcham or Sutton or Carshalton. And if you were to talk 20, 30 years ago about Tootingham, Mitcham or Wakefield or Bedford being snapped up by American investors, people would think you were mad. It's a strange development, isn't it? How do these investors even find out about teams of this size?
I can't say too much about Bedford because indirectly I know who was assisting them, I think, in that. Who's actually a friend of the show.
Is it you?
No, I'm not a friend of the show.
Oh, okay. Was it Finlay?
Yeah. But what American investors are doing is they've acknowledged that to actually buy into US sports franchises is ridiculously expensive. If you take a look at the prices being charged in the MLS, and the MLS is you're talking normally somewhere in the region of $250 million, perhaps more in terms of dollars. These are the prices. You could effectively buy Newcastle for that. You could certainly buy some other Premier League football clubs, and yet the MLS generates a fraction of the money. So buying into American franchise sports, especially their big sports, NFL, NBA, NHL, and so on, is ridiculously expensive. And we got a new breed of potentially younger people coming through who have made their money in different industries, who like soccer because of Ted Lasso. And now they're thinking, well, why can't we have a go at doing something in England? So this is why we're starting to see these type of new investors coming in. And they've got a genuine affection. I think some of them have got some really genuine good ideas, and they want to do the right thing, and they want to have a bit of fun at the same time. Yeah, Ryan Reynolds and McElhenney at Wrexham. Mm. It's in non-league. You can buy a club for relatively peanuts, and you can let it grow. At the same time, the things which we're concerned about, sustainability, legacy, have to be protected as well.
Yeah, Kieran, I thought we'd agreed to have an embargo on the whole Ted Lasso thing.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I don't want to be opening old wounds. Bottles in.
Yes, it's not an old wound, Kieran. It's a relatively new wound that's still open. Right. The fact that I didn't get a part playing myself in a cameo role.
Yes,
still smart. Still smart. So it's one of the reasons I'm really, really waiting for 2022 to come along because I can put a little bit more time between it. It's an interesting one. Do you think the Wrexham is? Do you think a lot of Americans are looking at what's happened to Wrexham and thinking, no, we'll have a piece of that? Because they may have fun, but they're not going to get to the Championship, are they? They're not going to get to League One, probably, with clubs like Wakefield.
They're not going to get there in 2 or 3 years, but the people in charge of Bedford, they're convinced that they can get into the EFL.
Yeah.
So if they've got a strategy, in one of the shows we did before Christmas, we spoke to Rob Kuhig, an American investor, an American lawyer who's got family who love football, and as he described to us on the show itself, he'd looked about 5 or 6 clubs before finally choosing Wickham, and they see the game in a different way to us, and I am quite conservative in my attitude towards football, you know, in terms of the importance that it plays. I'm fully aware, the same as you, history, heritage, that excitement of going to a match. And I never want to lose that. But it doesn't mean that somebody with a different perspective cannot also buy into our part of football and introduce new things. And they seem to have these ideas.
Yes, well, we'll learn about the Bedford owners' perspective early in the new year when we interview them. We have no choice, basically. normally, we have to ask people. It's like, no, you're interviewing us. Okay, fine. Tom Oliver has a question that I know you'll have been looking forward to all over the festive period, Kieran, or indeed in the 3 hours since we started the festive period this evening on Sunday, the 19th of December. Tom Oliver says, why does amortization have to happen in a straight line? It's been keeping me awake at night, I have to say. For example, a championship club takes a punt and buys a League One player for £1 million on a 4-year deal. He scores 25 goals and by the end of the season is worth approximately £5 million, so a potential £4 million profit for the club. The club decides to keep the player, so why should they then amortise the player by £250,000? Is this purely because the £5 million proposed fee is not proven and is, inverted commas, on paper, the asset is only worth £750,000? This seems so arbitrary and surely disadvantages clubs that add value to players. Why shouldn't clubs be free to amortise as they see fit? And if that question doesn't prove that it's a good job one of us is teetotal, I don't know what is.
I think to a certain extent, Tom has actually answered his own question. Why shouldn't clubs be free to amortise as they see fit? It's a bit like saying, why can't I agree to pay the tax authorities what I think is appropriate at the end of each year?
I've been going on about that for years.
The whole point about amortisation is that it's not supposed to have anything to do with market values. And there is an inherent issue in terms of how much is a footballer worth, because you have to decide. It's not like if you or I go and buy a bottle of whiskey or a microphone for our computer. There's a list price, and the microphone for the computer costs, you know, 60 quid. The bottle of whiskey costs 30 quid, whatever it's going to be, and everybody knows what the price is. And also, you know, I'm talking into my computer microphone at present. There are tens of thousands of them. They are all identical. They all do exactly the same thing. Footballers are unique. So how much is Wilfried Zaha worth at the end of this season? I don't know. You don't know. Steve Parish doesn't know. He'll put a punt on it. If somebody comes in, he'll say, yeah, we want 60 million quid for him. But there's no such thing as a definitive price. And therefore, if you're trying to have any reliance upon the accounts and somebody says amortization could be anywhere between 250,000 and 4 million, you can manipulate those results as you see fit. And this is sometimes known as the Mel Morris way of accounting, because that's what happened with Derby County. They just changed the numbers at the end of each season to suit their needs. And it also goes against the small print of the accounting rule book, which, yeah, unfortunately, you know, dullards like me have to follow.
Interesting that you're talking into your computer microphones. I'm talking into my bottle of whiskey. Kieran, you are very far from being a dullard. You know that. Our next question on this short pod comes from Pedro Ribeiro. And Pedro says, I'm from Brazil. Brackets, yes, I hear you from here. Which is quite sinister, Pedro, I have to say. But Pedro says, you might know my club, Sao Paulo FC, who beat Liverpool back in 2005 and revealed some wonder kids as Kaká and Lucas Moura. My question is, when the PL or the EFL are planning the fixtures for next season, do they consider distances travelled for each club? I ask this because here in Brazil, the fixtures are really stupid sometimes, with plenty of unnecessary trips across the country. I think Kieran, Pedro is asking a question that many, many English football fans ask themselves, what sort of planning goes into the fixtures. Also, the other problem with Brazil is a massive, huge country, isn't it, compared to here? So, you know, the Carlisle to Plymouth would be nothing in Brazil. So, but it's a really interesting question, and I expect the answer is no.
Well, it's no most of the time, but we are in the festive period. We hope I'm keeping my fingers crossed that matches have been taking place and we've managed to go and see them. And what the both the EFL and the Premier League try to do is that during the Christmas and New Year period, that they try to organise matches which doesn't involve too much travel for fans, if possible. Now, it can never work all the time. So, for example, Brighton have got two matches scheduled over Christmas, home to Brentford, away to Chelsea. So Brentford's 50 miles away, Chelsea's 50 miles away, trying to acknowledge that, you know, saying, you know, if I said to the Baroness on Boxing Day, oh, you know, we're away to Burnley, set off at 6:30 in the morning and get home at 11 o'clock at night, I'm going to be pretty unpopular. So to give the football authorities some credit, they try within reason. At the same time, they don't want the matches to be those type of derbies which involve an awful lot of police leave being cancelled. So you wouldn't have Brighton versus Palace, you wouldn't have Tottenham versus West Ham, and so on. So there is an attempt to have some geographical adjustments made. At the same time, we've got a further issue in terms of the broadcasters. And the broadcasters do not give a damn when it comes to matches taking place other than these festive periods. So we are recording this of the weekend of the 18th and 19th of December. Middlesbrough versus Bournemouth was scheduled, and it kicked off at 12:30 p.m. And fair play to the Borough fans. Yeah, they put up a sign. You know, 635-mile round trip. It's impossible if you're a Bournemouth fan to get to Borough using public transport. I support Brighton. Our kickoff was originally scheduled, had not been called off for COVID. We were playing at Old Trafford at 12:30 on a Saturday. So I pre-booked a prepaid, so I went up on the Friday and I stayed over. And this was a bit of a problem because I went out one evening with my lad, and I caught the 192 bus. I was staying in Stockport because if it's Manchester United are playing at home, you cannot get a hotel for love nor money. You combine that with the week before, the hotel prices in Manchester over the weekend were absolutely obscene. So I booked myself in Stockport, which, for people unfamiliar, Stockport's around about 8 to 10 miles south of Manchester as such. And to get from Manchester to Stockport, you have to get the legendary 192 bus. And it's known as the Looney bus for a reason. And I made the mistake of going upstairs on the bus. And I was getting off fairly close to the far end terminus, and there was one guy left on there, and he tried to sell me some spice. Now, I was so innocent that I thought, why is this bloke trying to sell me paprika or coriander? And then I realised that spice is apparently some sort of modern, and he was acting a bit strange. I managed to persuade him, and then I think he made the mistake because clearly he'd been taking some of his own product, and he befouled himself whilst in negotiations. He had this enormous coughing fit, as he said, "Oh, sorry, mate, I've just shat myself." Before
Kieran, it's the festive season, Kieran. Seriously.
Carrying on the negotiations, but it was an expensive. It was an expensive weekend, and this is crazy. Why are broadcasters making people travel these ridiculous distances for crazy kickoff times?
Yeah, there's always another option, Kieran. Palace played Man U recently, yes. And some friends of mine, including the delightful guys. decided to get a B&B, and they thought they'd go up on the Friday for the game on Sunday, you know, just settle in, get used to the atmosphere. And they were so popular in the local Wetherspoons on the Sunday morning when the Wetherspoons was absolutely packed and only letting home players in, they delivered to the B&B that he was staying in, which was literally within sight of the ground. And also, I'm just going to, Pedro, just to make your new year, I'm going to talk to you in Portuguese. I'm going to say, "Desculpa, não falo português."
Wow.
Which means, "I'm sorry, I don't speak Portuguese." Many years ago, before Ali, when I lived with a profoundly deaf girl who was spoke 12 languages, we went to Portugal, and she decided that she would teach me how to say, "I'm sorry, I don't speak Portuguese," in the unlikely event that one of the least Portuguese-looking people in the world would be approached in Lisbon. But lo and behold, within an hour of getting there, somebody came up to me and asked me for directions, and I just went, "Desculpa, não falo português," and they were really impressed.
Wow.
Our penultimate question. This podcast travels the world, doesn't it?
I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Larkin Hogel is a friend of the pod. And Larkin says, in a recent episode, Kieran said that a player can only be registered with two clubs in a season. Is that only applicable in the Premier League? Can you please explain what happened with Josip Bursic this past year? From what I can see, he was on the books for Stoke. He was then loaned to Doncaster, returned to Stoke, loaned again to Peterborough, and then amazingly appeared for Lincoln City in their first playoff match against Sunderland. So it looks like he played 17 matches for three different clubs, all in League One. How the hell did that happen?
Right.
I'd say that in an Australian accent because we know Larkin's from Australia. So.
And we're not talking about Australia. God knows what's happened to the cricket since then.
Forget that.
Yeah.
I'd forgot the Ashes. Mercifully, the alcohol lets me forget the Ashes is still going on.
Right. My understanding is that whilst he's on the books of Stoke, provided he doesn't play for Stoke, they can lend him out to a couple of clubs during the course of the season. So that would have been Doncaster and Peterborough. Now, the season officially finishes on when Peterborough's fixture list had completed. So therefore, he was then free because when you get to the playoffs, you're in a slightly different scenario. I would imagine that would have been some form of emergency loan, though, because otherwise, you know, what's to stop a club who get to the playoffs from signing a superstar on a one match basis, and especially if it was the championship playoff? Can you imagine, if Mo Salah went to go and play one game in a playoff final? And Liverpool charged £10 million for the privilege. So it does seem a strange one, is the answer. And I can't really give Larkin any more of an answer than that.
Right. Okay, I'm sorry about that, Larkin. Our last question of this year comes from Jim Kellett. And it's a suitably showbiz question, I think, to end the year. And Jim Kellett's question is this. It's about Watford, not a London team, as we've established. Jim says, Elton John reacquired Watford during the mid-1990s, and under his second ownership, Watford achieved back-to-back promotions to the Premier League. In a live performance of Can You Feel the Love Tonight, he credits The Lion King with changing my life in a lot of ways because it led me to do a lot of other things during the 1990s. Did the windfall from doing the soundtrack for an all-time classic Disney film bankroll his and Graham Taylor's second Watford run?
To a certain extent, it did. Elton John has made a huge amount of money from The Lion King, estimated to be 76 million.
Holy moly, really?
Yep, and that's mainly through the musical, not the film itself. And the musical has made a fortune for Disney. They've made $11 billion out of The Lion King, of which probably 80 or 90% has come from the musical. And if you think about it, that does make sense, because that musical runs in, it's in London, it's in New York, it's in other cities around the world. It's a fantastically lavish, spectacular production.
Yeah, wonderful piece of work.
But if you think football ticket prices are obscene, just go to a West End production of The Lion King and just empty your wallet and then empty it again. It was very, very lucrative for Elton John, and it certainly helped his financial position. And they've also just done a remake of The Lion King with sort of semi-live, and he took Disney for a further $13 million for the rights to use his song in that. So, yeah, it's been fantastically beneficial for all parties concerned. And all I can say is, as a parent, when it first came out, what a fantastic film.
It's a great film. It's a great live show. I feel I should defend my industry here. The ticket prices are one thing. They are expensive, but these shows are expensive to put on.
Yeah.
What you can't justify is I went to see a show. It is last week, but it's not last week now because it's free. At the Purcell Rooms. I wandered up to the bar beforehand and asked for a glass of wine, and was even I blinked when he went, that'll be £9.50, and then was completely out of thoughts. So he went, it's much cheaper to buy a bottle. I went, oh, okay. And then his mate said, it's cheaper to buy two bottles, which is why I ended up buying two bottles, which was fine because there were two of us, but I don't remember much about the show. But, I mean, that's the sort of thing the West End can't justify. The ticket prices, they can. I genuinely don't know at time of speaking whether my industry is happening or not. It's a difficult time for my industry. It's a difficult time for a lot of people listening to this, which is why we can only wish everybody a happy new year. After saying, if you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to the pod, go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. And if you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. And Kieran, I will take this opportunity to say we have many people over the past 18 months, 2 years, many, many people, hundreds, thousands, have said to us how important the pod has been in keeping them going through difficult times. And all I can do is echo those people and say it's been a brilliant thing for me to do. As you know, the last 3 months have been very, very difficult for me for various reasons. The 9 months before that weren't brilliant, to be perfectly honest, but having the opportunity to be with you, even remotely, twice a week, and to talk and be creative and be in control of what I'm doing and to talk to the world has been a wonderful thing. So, Kieran, I wish you a very, very happy new year, and I wish all our listeners the very same. And I will only repeat what we said before. Please, God, the next year is better than the last two we've had.
Absolutely. Well, thanks very much. And as somebody who is the antithesis of creativity, being an analyst, working with somebody who is creative has been the biggest learning experience of my life. And this has been the greatest thing I've ever done.
Oh, God love it. I'm getting very emotional now, but she's pointless because we'll actually be seeing each other 26
soon.
We're soon doing the quiz.
Right.
Bye, everybody. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, boys and girls and everybody else.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.